from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the sixth day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seed should join us to discuss the cash grain market. We'll take up the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather as we close out our time together. And along the way, we'll hear a discussion I had earlier today with Jonathan Kappas. We were reviewing a 24-minute press conference that Minnesota Democrat Colin Peterson, who will chair the House Committee on Agriculture once the new Congress is installed, and he outlines what the conference committee has been discussing as it's related to the Farm Bill, which could be passed into law before the lame duck session ends. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I have to tell you that I was thinking about Friday, Dan, because I'm going to go to Taylorville and broadcast from there tomorrow. I want to catch up to see what kind of things have happened since that December 1 tornado came through. And hopefully that they're starting to put things in shape there. That's kind of the reason I was thinking about Friday. But boy, it's been, speaking of tornadoes, a whirlwind of a week out of Washington, D.C. and Buenos Aires and now in Canada and in Geneva or Vienna. Things have just been all over the board this week. My gosh, there's lots happening and the trade hasn't taken much of it well, especially the outside markets. What do you think today?
Well, first of all, I used to live in Taylorville, Illinois for a year, many years ago, and I sure hope everything is going to turn out good for them. I did see that on the news, even though I'm downtown Houston here. Taylorville, Illinois did make the news, and I did see that. So I'm hoping everything is going to work out real good for them down there. As far as the markets go, I think everything is still in pretty good shape. I mean, we had a gap higher on Monday due to increased expectations that something with China was going to get worked out fairly soon. And then we've basically been able to hold our own ever since that. Corn has kind of been consolidating. It's in a kind of a four-day consolidation period with the gap open. Soybeans now did go down and almost closed it today. I think there's a quarter of a cent or a half a cent in your front months maybe, and I think your November contract maybe has a penny and a half of that gap still open, and then the market was able to close back toward the higher end of the price range. So I still think technically the market is in shape to go on higher. Listening to the chatter, or I guess looking at the chatter on the Twitter wire, I guess I'm just amazed at how many people are bad-mouthing a China trade deal, and nobody has any faith in it. They're all skeptical and blah, 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 blah. And it just reminds me of my millennial kids. They don't have no patience anymore. They want instant gratification. And I guess I'm optimistic that at the end of the day, China and the U.S. is going to work out an agreement to narrow the trade deficit. That was the key thing that Trump talked about during when he was running for campaign, that we cannot continue to export our wealth to these other nations the way we have been doing it. And we have to find a way to narrow that trade deficit. So I do believe that China's going to end up being a big agricultural purchase. I think they're going to be a big purchase of liquefied natural gas. I mean, we got so much gas down here in Texas, we're burning it off. It's free. We can't get rid of it. So that would be a nice market here for Texas to satisfy them. $50 oil, we can make a lot of money at $50 oil. So I think OPEC is wasting their time trying to talk about a cutback. Let them cut back. We'll produce more. So I think energy prices are going to stay relatively low. The economy, the stock market, I keep eating that stock market bull. It tastes better every day. I still want to be generally positive ag commodities for at least a selling opportunity. I know we got problems long term, and if we have favorable weather next year, we've got real big problems. But on the other hand, you know, we are due for some kind of weather hiccup somewhere along the line. It's been since 2012 since we've had a weather hiccup. So that could come along, and with increased China demand, we might have 2019 might not be too bad a year after all.
So I've got a question about Sunday evening and as it relates to Mr. Trump and how the trade thinks about this. He oftentimes will say something and then they'll either be partially there or they'll make it happen. The administration will make it happen in some form. But on the auto deal on Sunday night, there were an awful lot of details there. And maybe that's true, but you can't find it yet. So I'm wondering, how should the trade take what he says more than anything else? Do they need to wait it out? You talked about, you know, not being a millennial about this, about not needing the immediate satisfaction. Do you think that the trade can come to grips with how the president makes proclamations?
Well, I think they need to. Number one, even if they had, I don't know what happened in Buenos Aires, but I do know that the China economy is hurting real bad. And I know from my sources I talked to in Singapore that China wants to cut some kind of deal. They want to get this thing behind us. And I'm sure the Trump people are telling Trump, we got to get this behind us. We got to get some kind of deal cut here and kind of get all this stuff behind us. And so I do believe there is mid-level, lower level, whatever kind of level people there is, I do think they're trying to figure out a way to get something behind us on this trade situation that could be considered kind of a win for both sides. Now, the trade has always been that way. I mean, the trade is always skittish. But I mean, like I told you, I just listened to the stuff on Twitter on Sunday night. I was just kind of pulling my hair out how skeptical everybody was. Well, if they're skeptical, get the hell short, you know. Sell a couple million beans. See what happens.
I got a question about that. Are we far enough into the marketing year now that even if China says they're going to buy soybeans, and maybe they will, a couple cargoes, will it make very much difference, or will they simply turn their attention as they would normally to the South American crop when it begins to come in?
Well, what happens if they just continue to buy from the United States and South America begins to pilot?
If they make a commitment.
Yeah, and all of a sudden,
if they make it, yeah, if there's a commitment, if there's an ask, Greg Dowd, and they talked about that after the November National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, about a week after that, the administration started to talk about that, but haven't seen anything on a commitment yet. That I suppose that would be, and of course that's all speculation still too.
I mean, so China needs to get along with the United States. China's whole scheme of things is dependent upon the United States. They could throw Brazil out of their back window and want to hurt their economy. Their economy is driven by U.S. purchases. And if they want that to continue, they have to step up to the plate and start buying more U.S. Products that we produce. Unfortunately, we don't produce very much. We do produce food, and we do produce energy, and those are two key things that China can buy a lot of from the United States to help trade. And they don't need to deal with Brazil. What does Brazil give them? You know, so I think Brazil might be in trouble more so than anything. All of a sudden, Brazil's increased their acres, and if they have a big crop, and then all of a sudden, they got to put their beans in bags, and then the United States gets to empty all of our bags. So we'll have to see how this thing plays out.
I like it. So somebody's got this is the first time that somebody's actually going to end up holding the bag. We'll see.
Yeah, somebody's going to hold the bag. And, you know, United States held it this year. South America is going to hold it next year.
Hey, I need to let you go. So thank you so much for taking the time. And we'll take more up during Commodity Week. You'll join me in about half an hour, 40 minutes. I appreciate it. All right?
Okay, very well.
Yeah, that is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, it looks like the Farm Bill may get done during the lame duck session. We're not sure about that yet. However, earlier in the week, Colin Peterson, a representative from Minnesota, who will be the incoming chair now that the Democrats will be taking over all those positions of the House Ag Committee, talked for about 24 minutes in a press conference. And boy, did he talk a lot about what they've been up to in the conference committee. It was amazing. Jonathan Kappas, who's the ag policy specialist here on campus, to listen to that. What did we learn from that press conference discussion? And it was just him really talking for 24 minutes.
Yeah, no, Mr. Peterson gave quite a bit of inside the negotiations here for conference and kind of gave an overview of what this conference agreement should look like. And he kind of says at the end, and we've seen it in some news clips recently, they're still working through Congressional Budget Office cost estimates. And so there's always the potential things will change and they may hit a glitch or two. But right now it looks like your point is absolutely correct. They've got a deal. They've got everything kind of nailed down but for the cost estimates. And it's a matter of time. When can it get completed, written up, scored, and out on the floor and passed here in the lame duck? So we should hopefully see the language and the CBO estimates next week, and then you presume it can move shortly thereafter.
Okay, so let's go through things that we know that have happened already, probably for sure, but we need to make sure that we get them hit. The SNAP discussion as it relates to work requirements that the House wanted, gone.
Yeah, so Mr. Peterson was pretty clear about that, and we've talked about that a lot throughout this debate. It was very obvious in both the House and Senate debates that the additional stronger work requirements that the House Ag Committee wanted on SNAP simply were not going to. It was either they get those and there's no farm bill, or they get a farm bill without it. And it appears that that a couple weeks ago that was pretty much resolved, and Chairman Conaway and the House Ag Committee backed off of those, which allowed then the rest of the negotiations to complete. And so it appears that the final bill will look a lot like the Senate bill on SNAP, which is kind of what we expected.
The fires in California caused forestry issues to be talked about, but
yeah, it appears that so there were some what we call riders in the House Ag Committee bill, and what this is when you attach something that's non-germane to the, or not relevant to the bill, usually outside the House Ag Committee's jurisdiction. And Mr. Peterson points that out pretty clearly. They ran into some real sticky, controversial issues with the Natural Resources Committee over these riders. And the Senate, again, was not going to pass them. Then there's this weird sort of that was already in the bill. And then when President Trump went out to see the wildfires in California and talked about raking the forests, somehow that reignited this issue or brought it back up. And so that was kind of like the last and final bit of it that they had to sort out. But it appears that none of the controversial provisions that were of such an issue are in that. That sounds like it been cleared out, and the bill is, you know, not going to contain some of the problems there.
So let's talk about some of the changes. Loan rates have not been changed for eons, it seems. This is what most farmers would think of as the LDP. They probably remember that not fondly, I would think, as well. But
yeah, I mean, we've had this marketing loan program. I mean, this, you know, the loan provisions have been in there since the 30s, so this is sort of the longest running part of it. We have not, for most of the major crops, corn, soybeans, wheat, have not seen much of a loan increase, I don't think, since 2002. So corn, apparently, according to Mr. Peterson, they've got about a 15% increase in loan rates, which he said took the corn loan rate up to about 220 a bushel, which is a pretty interesting change. I would not have seen, did not see that one coming based on the debates. The loan rates were not really debated throughout this bill. So that was an interesting bit of information from him.
Yeah, and it would be up from $1.94 and something he fought for, apparently, and was the only one of the four leaders that really thought that was worthwhile. What other things are changed?
Well, I think he made, we'll just sort of walk through a couple basics. So he basically says the ARC and PLC programs are largely status quo. So there are not many changes there. He did mention that ARC will be using the crop insurance yields, and so they're using a different yield calculation in the guarantee and the actual, which everybody hopes will help smooth out some of these county by county differences that we ran into with NASS. He mentioned with PLC the potential for a yield update, and he discussed briefly the reference price. So he said he clarified that reference prices were not raised, so it's still $3.70 for corn and $8.40 for soybeans. But the House had included a provision we call an escalator provision, which would allow the reference prices to increase if market year average prices increased over multiple years. It's an Olympic moving average. So you'd have to have 3 or 4 years of price increases. And it appears that Chairman Conaway and the House Ag Committee got that provision included in PLC along with the yield update. So those are the biggest changes, I think, from his interview. Those are the biggest changes to the programs that I heard.
If it makes it through CBO scoring, okay, in whatever form that is, chances of it passing during the lame duck session are?
Oh, really good. At this point in time, unless, so look, here's the big outliers aren't with the farm bill, right? I mean, if they've got an agreement, you presume the House, it's going to take a lot of Democratic votes to get it passed, but they can move it through. The Senate can move it through. You're not going to go forward if you don't think they have those votes. I think the bigger issues are some of these other issues that are out there. So we still have a government shutdown looming, even though with President George H.W. Bush's services yesterday, they've kicked that down the road a little bit. But that's the kind of thing that can upend every other discussion. You've still got a few issues out there around some other legislation in the Senate. So there's always those kind of things that can really could take the wheels off. But right now, if the CBO scores come back, this thing should be ready to go, and we should see it by the holidays.
Thanks so much.
You bet. It's always good to talk to you, Todd.
Jonathan Kappas is an agricultural policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So an interesting day, actually a pretty interesting week in Chicago and around the planet. First, tell me about the gap in soybeans. I don't think it filled it completely, but we're back down at the bottom. As much as you don't want to see the gap filled, I suppose it's a little bit of good news if we can kind of get that filled and then go back up.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. I think a lot of folks have been hoping that that's what we were going to see, fill the gap and then head back higher. We're definitely going to need some news, I think, to actually get us to go back higher. I don't think filling the gap's going to be much of an issue personally, but I guess I'm not terribly friendly at the point unless we get something a little more concrete put in place. You know, yeah, we've got 90 days to talk this over. They were talking the other day about, buying 5 million metric tons of soybeans, both, between old and new. That's not enough, though, to get us anywhere close to the kind of business that we've seen.
What do you suppose it is, Matt, that producers ought to be considering at this point? We've had an opportunity, I guess, and maybe you think it's an opportunity or not, to sell soybeans, new and old crops. Should they still be watching for such things?
Well, yeah, I think whenever you look at what's going on, the base has gotten a little bit better for beans since harvest has gone on, and you add the 82 cents, most people in our part of the world, boy, they can make a ton of money on old crop beans, whether they know it or not. I mean, you've got to do the math, and especially if we go ahead and get another payment, we're going to find that out here anytime. But as far as new beans go, that's a tougher question. But, you know, I'm sitting here looking at a board price right now above $9.50. And, you know, there's There's no guarantees that we're going to get back to 10. I know a lot of folks have said $10 beans we've had several years in a row, but that doesn't mean we're going to get them this year. And I personally don't feel terribly optimistic about that, barring some sort of a guaranteed amount of beans that would be purchased from the Chinese. If we get that kind of guarantee, I think you go back to 10 fairly easily. If you don't, I'm not sure we see 10 this year.
We don't have very much time left here. Quickly on corn. Corn, old crop or new crop sales?
I'm going to be a little more patient, especially with stuff in the bin. As far as new crop goes, I don't have any problem with an increment. I just don't want to get terribly carried away.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Tell me about weather in South America to begin with. Let's start in Argentina, where things are better than they certainly were last year at this time.
No, this year is starting out about as well as you can imagine. Over the last 30 days, none of the first crop corn was drier than normal, and only 1% of Argentina's soybean production was drier than normal. If we go back a year ago, those numbers were closer to 80%. So most of their crop was looking at a drought 1 year ago, and right now everything is looking pretty good. It is going to stay a little dry there for the next few days, but then we see a big rain moving in next week. So this is going to keep the soil moisture levels at adequate to even surplus levels going into the middle of the month.
Brazil, like the United States, has a large land mass that is in production, so it can change from one side of the country to the other. I think usually north to south rather than east to west for it. But can you tell me a little bit about production there?
Well, we show that about 25% of their first crop corn and soybean production was drier than normal over the last 30 days. That's not a huge amount because 1 year ago, it was around 80%, so basically pretty similar. All of the dryness at the moment is located in Paraná and Mato Grosso do Sul. Those two states are pretty important to corn and soybean production. However, the level of dryness at this moment is not particularly intense. As we go forward, there is not much rain in the forecast for those areas over the next 10 days, but there is rain in the forecast right after that, and the setup looks fairly favorable for some significant totals at the middle of the month. All in all, with just a little bit of dryness in a small area of Brazil and rain in the forecast, it's also difficult to be too concerned about their crops.
And then from east to west across Europe into parts of Asia, they have suffered drought. I think that may be changing now.
Well, it has been drier than normal over the last 90 days across large swaths of the EU, Ukraine, and Russia. We have seen some decent rains and snows over the last week or so, and we're looking for those to continue going forward. All in all, it is wintertime in Europe and Russia and Ukraine, just like it is here in the U.S., so all weather issues are somewhat minor at this time of the year. But it is good for those farmers to be seeing some rain and snow at this time, though the key periods of development for the rapeseed and wheat crops are still many, many months away. But all in all, at the moment, things are improving a little bit.
And finally, I see that you're adding energies to the list of things that you follow, liquefied natural gas, or LNG in particular. Tell me what you're seeing there and what's weather related.
Well, it's been pretty cold out this week, and the coldest weather of the heating season so far comes up over the next 3 days. After that, we start to warm up quite a bit, and maybe it won't be balmy outside, but temperatures will be closer to normal than where they have been, and they'll even be above normal. Over the next 2 weeks, though, we will see a number of storm systems move on through. Whenever one of these passes, you have to keep an eye on it to see if it pulls in Arctic air once it passes. You may notice that after a big rain or snow event, it gets a lot colder in the winter. From everything that we're seeing, it looks like all of the systems that are going to pass, not only over the next couple of days, but next week and the following week heading into the end of the month, are not going to be directly tapped into Arctic air. So although we will see some cold snaps here and there, we don't look for anything unusual. And all in all, it looks a little bit milder than what it did look like, say, in the forecast 2-3 weeks ago for this period now.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago.